and welcome. Thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO is our number. And if you prefer email, and wow, we had a lot of emails last week. That was fun. That was really interesting to have all the emails last week. And thank you for participating. That's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Mixed bag, right? It's frustrating. It's frustrating. Life is frustrating right now. It is. It just is. We look around the world and we see people taking over city blocks in Seattle. And not long ago, we would have simply said, that is just insane. It's crazy. It's got to end. And you would actually have politicians doing something about it instead of lawless behavior. Now it's like, it's okay. And so they try to do it elsewhere. And of course, like, that's not going to happen. And other cities go, no, thank you. Like Portland. Nope. Portland. Of all places, Portland said no. Of all places. But this kind of thing is just like, that's not the way we behave. And then we hear about a good increase in retail sales, right? Like, well, that's great. That's great. It's up like a ridiculous amount. After being down, we know it's on a really low level, and so it has high percentages jumping up. But still, way, way better than people had expected. Way better. I mean, like double the rosiest expectations. We're like off 4% from a year ago in the midst of a crisis. I mean, it's amazing how good the economy was before coronavirus. But apparently how angry we were. And so we get these mixed signals, right? It's like the world isn't the way it's supposed to be. People are acting irrationally. People are super angry. Instead of having a discussion, they throw rocks and Molotov cocktails. What peaceful protest? I have the right because, well, the cops aren't here to just steal. And by the way, instead of just stealing, let's break stuff too. Let's burn it. Let's burn down our neighborhood. Irrational, weird behavior. We look at politics and we've got a guy that just tweets all the time versus a guy that actually, in polling, most people think has dementia. Early stages, because he can still form a sentence. But really? We're really thinking about electing somebody who has dementia, who clearly doesn't have his fastball, right? Or whatever. He just doesn't have it, if he ever did. Who said so many inappropriate racial things, but he's not Donald Trump. That's the world we're in, and it's frightening. We have a Supreme Court that we think is normal, but then they make weird decisions out of the blue. Like, it's okay if Obama did it, but now it's not okay if the president does it. Okay. It's weird. And it causes us to look at this, and I think not clearly, to look at everything through the filter of, what happened to my world? How can I invest in a world that makes no sense? How can I do that? How can I invest when I know? Now, here's the thing, though, right? We don't know. Man, that's hard. Golly, it's hard. Smarter you are, the harder it is to invest correctly, because I said, understand that. The smarter you are, the harder it is to be a good investor, because you think you got stuff figured out. And nobody knows the future. Nobody. I mean, people, I hear it all the time. Super smart people. Super smart. Really thoughtful in lots of ways. Outfox themselves all the time when it comes to investing. But they keep doing it too because they're so smart. That's the problem when we don't learn from our past mistakes. We don't learn. We don't learn. And people will say, I don't know the future, but people still say, I keep hearing, analysts keep saying, economists are, scientists say, millions of people will die. We will be overrunning our hospitals. We are out of ventilators. It takes 2 or 3 years to have a have a vaccine. And on. All wrong, but we come right back to the same thing. Here's what the experts say. And further, wow, this is the hardest one. This is so hard. It's hard for me. It's hard for you. It's hard for everybody. Where do you get your news? Because where you get your news, typically, like 99.9% of the time, 99.9% of the people are just going to find the news that confirms what their bias already says is true. I am going to watch the news that hates Donald Trump because I don't like Donald Trump. I'm going to watch the news that likes Donald Trump because I like Donald Trump. Now, one is more fair than the other. I totally get that. That's not my point. It's not to analyze the fact that you have a completely irrational, non-journalistic. They aren't journalists at all. I mean, they're just not. I don't even know why they call themselves journalists. They're just put together pieces to destroy all conservative thought. That's it. That's all they do. There's no opposition opinion. There's none. None. And it's totally awful and totally rigged. But what happens when you talk to somebody who thinks that they're going to die of the coronavirus? And let's just say they're healthy 45-year-old. That's totally irrational. The chance of them dying from the coronavirus, you know, they won't leave their house. They're super afraid to get it. They won't travel to go any more than to the store. They get up in the middle of the night to go to the store because it's less people. All those things. Completely irrational. People getting in it, but they have no problem getting in a car. Maybe even driving all the way across the United States. But getting on an airplane, oh no, can't do that. Can't do that. It's not rational. But it's because people sit there and go to the news that doesn't look at it. For example, we've had an explosion of cases in Idaho. We have. I mean, we were like at 30 cases a day. And then the weekend hits. Boom. We have 100 cases a day. 100 plus. A lot of cases. That's an explosion, right? 300. We need to put on a percentage so that we can, like, really scream the headlines. 380% increase in cases. True. Page 2. The number of positive tests, percentage-wise, has gone down. Oh, so we're testing more. Uh-huh. Oh. Okay. I'm not saying it's not going to bounce back. Why wouldn't it? It should. Sidebar. I hope it does. A little bit. Why? So we have a little more herd immunity heading into the winter. That would be my hope. We're learning how to treat it. That's the real news. Less people are dying when they get it. That's the real news. That's the important news. Therapeutics are coming. Some are already here. What do they have, 250 of them? More than that, I'm sure now, but 250 was the last I heard. 250 different therapeutics in advanced testing. Amazing. Never seen this before. It's a Manhattan Project of killing the virus. It will work. Oh, but it'll mutate, it'll this, it'll that. All of those things. I immediately know where you get your news. I know what you watch. I probably now know what your political bias is, leanings. By either being super afraid or not very careful. Now, there's plenty of people that fall in the middle. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to be extreme about this. But we have to be careful, because what ends up happening, too, is that we look at the world through our filter, through the news filter that hates Trump. And when we do that, why would I think that it's okay to invest? I wouldn't. Because every good piece of economic news is followed by 25 bad pieces that we dug up somewhere. Because we couldn't possibly see the economy doing okay. We couldn't possibly see us building some immunity, having therapeutics, learning how to treat the drug, the disease, so that people don't die. We're learning how to isolate the vulnerable. We really are. But all you see are the headlines that scream outbreak. And then we find the scientists that confirm my fear, put them on the news, and I watch 24/7. Why would I think the economy has any chance of coming back? Why would I think we're not going to go back into lockdown? Why would I think it's okay to move forward? Why would I think to go ahead and open up my store? Why would I go shop? Why would I participate in life? Therefore, I better keep my money under the mattress and not invest. There are trillions. The money is awash in cash that has negative returns. I don't just mean the negative interest rates, negative return because of inflation, right? I mean, we just literally are like, I accept to lose a little bit of money every year. That's what I want to do. That's my investment philosophy. Wow. But what I'm saying is, if you are a manager of billions of dollars for, let's just say, for the endowment for the local college, for the firemen, the policemen. I'm sorry, I did say the word policeman. Sorry, I'm so sorry. Those dreadful people that protect us. I mean, that abuse us. It's insane world we live in. And when we think about that, though, those pension managers have to invest. They can't make the choice to go lose money. They can't. No option. No option. They have to figure out a way so money finds its way in. Whether you think you're going to get on a cruise ship someday or not, people are investing. They think that some people will at some point. The casinos are opening up. You don't have to go, but some people want to. I don't know how well they're doing. Honestly, I don't. The point is, we're opening up. And I think we're going to stay open. And I think we're learning how to treat this disease. But the headlines are going to scream from now through November to try to get rid of Donald Trump. It's their job. It's been their job for a long, long time. And we need to be careful what our inputs are. Do they just agree with us or not? But when we stop and try to figure out what's going to happen with the virus, what the future is going to look like, you really are going to outfox yourself. Really are. Be careful. Be really, really careful. Wisdom is not being able to guess what the future is. Wisdom is knowing how little we know about the future. and how awesome that is. And accept that we can't know it all. And just keep learning about new stuff that's coming. But you don't have to be a predictor to be a smart guy. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Hello and welcome. Thank you again for joining us. And if you want to join us on the air, we'd love to have you. It's 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Although last week, I got to tell you, it was very interesting trying to do the show with no calls. I mean, sometimes not a lot of people call, but it was different, and I was very, thank you so much for all the emails. It was great. Remember, that's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Hey, Jim, how are you today?
Fine, thanks, Dave. How you doing?
Good, good.
Yeah, you mentioned the world turned upside down. Well, I thought I'd give you a note, and that's a double entendre, a note on history. I guess it was in 1783 when the British were surrendering the Revolutionary War. And their band was playing a tune called The World Turned Upside Down.
Mm.
So anyway, and also I heard on the news, you know, statues are out. I heard that in San Francisco they toppled one of Francis Scott Key.
Hmm.
Now, why they had one of him in San Francisco, they must have one at least in Baltimore, but, I mean, they've gone mad.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they have. Like George Washington's out now, so apparently in Portland they burned a flag on George Washington's face. So,
you know, I mean, that's what's hilarious. I mean, you ban the Confederate flag, but you're allowed to burn the U.S. flag.
Well, yeah, I don't get it. And it's some kind of weird autonomous zone. I don't know how they think that ends. So anyway, it's a very weird upside down world for sure.
Anyway, hold the coast, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. As far as investing goes and stocks, and, you know, it's only money. You may lose your ass, but what the hell, you know, you still got the stocks. I did have stock in Avianca, and they were going to declare bankruptcy, but then they reorganized, so they started from 4 cents to 27 to 40, I think it was, to 50. So they're up to 50-some-odd cents a share now, so they're doing great.
Well, that's good. We, you know, it is. And, you know, so many companies are doing great. There are some that are still struggling. We saw that this week, for example. We saw the cruise lines take a hit. We saw, again, as people are worried about the virus coming back, slowing down the recovery. And it makes good sense. People are jumping out ahead of the game, even though there's nobody on cruise ships. They were buying the cruise ship business, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think these things going to be ebbing and flowing. But if we're going to be cruising again, we're going to be going to hotels and casinos and jumping on airplanes. Well, there's time. You don't have to be the first people out.
Well, you know, my brother and I, we were lucky to
hurry,
take
Jim.
It. Hurry,
Jim. Nope, sorry. We're going. That's it.
See you
Thank
later.
You.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back for the next hour. Hello and welcome, and thank you for joining us. Hour number two upcoming. And of course, these are my opinions only. We are not here to tell you what to buy and sell. And if we mention something favorably or unfavorably, it should have nothing to do with your portfolio. It's there for examples. And I don't know what your objectives are. And when people ask, you know, what a great investment is, it's like, well, the one that is working towards your investment goals, right? I'm looking for more growth. Let me shift gears a little here. This just kind of popped in my head, and I want to talk about this because it's an important point when you're looking at different investments. You might think of an investment that is like, I'm a growth guy, right? And that's what I was starting to say. So I will be buying stocks like a Google and an Amazon and Apple. But Apple can be an income play because they raise their dividend every year. Sometimes it fits in a portfolio even because you want to have some stuff that's there for growth, because guess what's worked really well the last 10 years? Growth. What hasn't worked? Everything else. But there are also times in a growth position, income position, where they can overlap. And that's one of those things where we went through right now, and this happens about once every 10 years, where you get valuations that are so good, so low on things that maybe aren't growthy. They could be income because the credit markets seized up for a short period. And what you want to do is you want to own bonds because you get amazing potential yields instead of just owning growth. So you have this crossover, and you always want to be thinking of it this way. Risk and reward. See, people automatically define themselves and put themselves in a box. I'm not worried about risk. Okay? So that does that mean you should be buying penny stocks? No, you shouldn't. Does it mean it hurts as an appropriate investment? A company that has said, we are filing bankruptcy. We are in the midst of that. We are asking the courts to take all of our stuff. Oh, well, since I'm a high risk taker, I think I'll go buy their stock, which is going to zero. Why? Or I don't know anything about the business of growing pot, but whoa, I was reading online and people are making lots and lots of money. Dude, I think we need to go get some pot stocks because, man, I'm not worried about risk. No evaluation. Great investing is encompassing a large spectrum. For example, if you don't have a lot of great investments right now, there's nothing wrong with letting some cash build up. But if you're doing that because you're clever and you're guessing the future is full of coronavirus or whatever bad thing you know is happening, then you're guessing the market. That's not wise. If you define yourself and stay in a box, like, I can't take any risk. I don't like risk. It doesn't. Maybe you need to learn. We live in a zero interest rate world. You cannot take no risk. Period. You can't. We have to measure it. You have to understand it. You have to know that prices change. How do you define risk? Is it something we just simply say, risk is a temporary price movement? Really? That's it. It's not like not having enough money to live your life the way you want to, not having enough to send your kids to school, not enough for your grandkids to go to school, however you're trying to figure things out. That's not risk. No, no, no. It would be if the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell today, that's risky. Wow. That's a really odd definition of risk to me. It is. It's like, no, I think I'm just going to have my money not grow. I'm going to go see one of those equity index annuity pimps because they promised me I can't lose money. That's it. I don't make money, but I can't lose it. And then we can spin a tail and boom, I'm trapped. If we define risk so narrowly, we can't invest. That's wrong. But chasing returns is super wrong. I got to give you an example of that. I've been meaning to talk about this for quite some time. It was actually earlier this month that I saw this. Wall Street Journal did a article, front page article actually, so it was, you know, kind of a big long expose on the collapse of risky securities, how the collapse of risky securities burns individual investors. I thought, well, that's interesting. I wonder what they're talking about. And they're talking about exchange traded notes, ETNs. Now, these are instruments that trade like stocks on the exchange. They're very complicated, esoteric investments. Not important for you to understand. They're not. They're leveraged bets. That's what they are. You can get them on everything, right? You can get, that's what a lot of people did with the oil thing, and it levered them right out of business. Right, lost all their money. Okay. But when they work and the market's going up, they really work well because what? They're investments on steroids. So we have individuals. This is amazing to me that people would put money in and keep rolling the dice. Now, we see this all the time, right? It's kind of like if you put a shiny object out there, like, you know, a red cape in front of a bull, get some fired up. We made 18% last year on our blah, blah, blah. We tripled our money on this option or call strategy. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, I just see it all the time. I see one that was running all last week. You know, they just tucked it in on everything on, you know, like Yahoo Finance. And it kept popping up. It's like, this inexperienced kid made $1 million in 2020. I'm assuming it's 100% made up. Just 100%. Like, I think what I want to do is push the button and go into that person's website and figure out how I, too, can make $1 million in a few months during a pandemic. Beautiful. We get this shiny object like, wow, I'm going to make 18% a year. I'm going to make 25 a year. 30. The S&P 500, since 1926, 10% a year. Don't do anything. It owns the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? Stocks that went to zero. Stocks that don't pay dividends. Stocks that do. And brilliant, amazing companies like Microsoft, Apple, after it redid it, you know, nearly went out of business, came back, right? Many flamed out. It's the perfect example of creative destruction. 10% for your lifetime. That's the maximum, folks. Sorry. You get a little leverage on it, and if you can stay in business and during downturns, you don't get run out, you could make maybe a little bit more. But when somebody is shining an object in front of you that says, we're going to get 18% a year, it's clearly has massive amounts of risk. Massive amounts. Doesn't seem to matter to people. Shiny object. It's either like, I don't want any risk, so I'm going to believe any tale that's told over here, or I'm going to believe the tale of 18%. I'm just going to keep putting money in. Hey, it worked a little bit. Let's do some more. Until what? You crap out. It blew up. This is unbelievable to me when you stop and you think about this. So this story goes on, and I'm not going to be reading the story to you. If you want to look it up, go ahead. It just talks about some silly area of the market that individuals blew up in. But we're not supposed to let people do that, according to this. So this Mr. Zhu, who was one person, I think he lost something like $700,000 doing this. Not at one time, because he was making money, but he was really happy making money. See, he says, we're too old to play these games. Really, I would agree with you. What the heck are you doing in this narrow, tiny spot of the market? I know. You heard about it. You tried it. You made a lot of money. And then you put all of your money there. And then you crapped out. It's too difficult for us. We were just looking for some basic income. Like, really, woe is me. He is now suing his online brokerage. What? Because they're not they should have policed it. Like, what? Nobody came with a gun. It wasn't an illegal investment. It's a listed security with extremely high risk. And by the way, it comes with a warning label on it. This is extremely risky. It really does. Really, people go to an online brokerage, say, I am fully capable of doing this on my own. I wouldn't want to pay somebody. Oh, goodness gracious, no. I want to do this on my own. And they do really stupid stuff on their own. lose their money, and they now are victims? Are you flipping kidding me? Unbelievable. I mean, there's so many lessons from this. If you're getting a ridiculously high rate of return, know it. Avoid it. If you don't know what the risk is, you need to know if you're getting more than 0.7. That's the 10-year treasury. 10-year treasury is at 0.7%. If you're getting more than that, you need to know what your risk is. I'm not saying it's high risk to get 1.2. It's extremely low, 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 so low, it's unbelievably low. I get that. But if you're getting a yield of, let's say, well, my yield is 8. Well, that's a nice yield. Yeah, I know. It's just, you know, because this company pays that much in a dividend. Does it really? And the market's telling you what? With a 10-year treasury at 0.7, I wonder why the market has bid that company stock down to such a level that its yield is 8. And only available for you. Amazing. I would think that the market might discover such a gem like that. I'm not saying you can't buy them and shouldn't buy them. Many times you should. But you need to know what the risk is. Always. Always. This is how people fall prey to all kinds of things. Get stuck in an annuity for 10 years that can't work. The people that get stuck in things that have extremely high risk that are inappropriate. We need to take personal responsibility to some level of understanding what it is we're investing in. To some level. Don't have to be a genius. But trust that gut that says, man, that sounds too good to be true. I don't think it makes sense for me to be buying a bankrupt company because other people are. I don't care. I mean, I saw this with MK here in town. This is a true story. I literally did a number of programs. This is like 20 some years ago. And said, you can't buy the stock because the company is declared bankruptcy in MK. But and here's what people said. Yeah, but MK built the Hoover Dam. I know they did. And a lot of amazing things. But owning the stock is, it's gone. They bought it anyway. Because they couldn't believe this company wasn't worth more than $2 a share. Or $1.50. Until it wasn't. It was worth zero. Actually, 25 cents with some warrants and stuff. That was the bankruptcy play. Couldn't stop people from buying it. You couldn't. The only way you could was to slow them down, was say, okay, I get it. You're going to buy it. You want to throw $1,000 at it? I got it. It's going to go away. Got a better chance betting on red or black at a casino. Much better. The only thing I can tell you is you can't buy it here. I won't do it. But you can go open up an account somewhere else and go do it all day long. People sometimes are determined to be doing what they shouldn't be doing, sitting down at a poker game and wondering who the sucker is. If you can't figure out who it is, right, you know the adage. It's you. We need to understand and not just throw money at it. I just want to do that. Don't just want to do that. It's a door you don't need to go in. You don't. Good investing is not knowing everything in the world. It's just simply understanding that reasonable returns are, I mean, hey, a cup of coffee a day, $5 a day, is over $1 million in 40 years in the S&P 500. Isn't that amazing? What do you have to know to do that? Did you have to chase a stock? Do you have to run over to something that puts you in something that can't earn any money? No. You just had to buy the great corporations of the world. That's it. And by the way, today, it's free. Amazing stuff. It really is. and we make too much of it. And it steers us out into these crazy places. And then we're victims. Oh, I didn't know I would lose my $800,000. I didn't know that I would stop getting 18% a year. Really? Remarkable. I know. Where's personal responsibility? I get it. But we've got to be aware of that. Hey, I've got the greatest email from last week. I'm going to talk about it sometime during today, so hang in there. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the history of the New York Stock Exchange and trading. So I hope to hear from you at 580-KIDO or dave@petzofinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and again, thanks for joining us. Time for your emails. dave@petzofinancial.net. What do you want to talk about? Let me know. Love to talk about that. It's fun. You know, I think about that. It's so much fun. I don't know what Kevin's going to talk about on Mondays, for example. And it just is fun to think about and talk about whatever. Whatever topics you guys want to talk about. We're here. All right. So this is a great one. Don, thanks for sending this in. It's very thoughtful. Would you please talk about the history of the New York Stock Exchange and how trading has evolved over the years? How it's changed in the last 20, 30, 40 years or more? You occasionally touch on the subject, but it would be interesting to hear more about how trading has changed over time. You know, it is. And I thought that's a long question. So let me take it down a little bit, because I don't just want to do a historic report, you know, like, well, the trading was X and Y and Z. But let me give you a little bit of background here and then talk about some of the radical changes that really affect our trading and the way the markets operate today. But it was founded, believe it or not, the New York Stock Exchange was founded 228 years ago, 1792. Was the first time they had it was like 20 some brokers got together, you know, and put a little agreement together. But what we forget is that this is not, I want you to understand this. This is the New York Stock Exchange is the most important thing on the planet for freedom. I don't know what the Constitution is and all those things. I get it. But for ongoing, what I'm trying to say on a regular basis, what we forget is that it is how capital is formed. Capital is formed in big business on the New York Stock Exchange. Trading of bonds, stocks, all kinds of derivatives. For example, if you want to be hedging your, you know, you might say, well, that's on the Commodities Exchange in Chicago. I get that. But what I'm trying to say is these markets, not just the New York Stock Exchange, but the exchanges where we have free trade of oil or stocks. We buy bonds so companies can finance the expansion that are going, advertising, whatever it is. New companies come out and they're like, okay, we're small, but we're successful. We're losing money now, but if we can get additional capital, man, we can go. And that's where the capital is formed. It's not a place to, as I was talking about just a minute ago, to go out and play with stupid little tokens. Do that in the casino. Don't gamble in the stock market, because it's not. It's the way you build wealth. And if you think of it that way, you think of risk differently. You think of everything differently. You don't think of this as like, wow, these are just like a bunch of cowboys. No, they're not. This is not the Wild West. And if you're talking about traders screaming and yelling in the commodities pits, yes, that's weird. That's crazy. But it does have a function. This, in the New York Stock Exchange, the main purpose is the formation of capital for business. Businesses to expand, which expands the economy, expands freedom. It's an auction system, which basically says it puts buyers and sellers together at a set price. And they had all these seats on the exchange, and this kind of goes all the way back, but they had seats on the exchange. They don't now. But these seats were very valuable. At times, they went up to millions and millions of dollars. In the end, those seats were worth, I think, a couple million by the time they went out. And that was somewhere around 2005. That's where it was. I knew I put a note to that. Okay, so 2005. So it's not that long ago that they literally had these, where you saw these people milling about, right? Now it's electronic, mostly. Mostly all electronic. And that started in the late 1990s, moving towards electronic trading. And now, in 2007, not that long ago, literally all stocks can be traded electronically. There still are some exchange specialists, but they are diminishing, and it's almost all electronic, which will bring me to the next coming points. Why this is important over my lifetime in investing and how the changes have been so dramatic is it used to be very, very expensive to trade stocks. I mean, it really was. There were commissions charged, and they were big. And when I first started, they were regulated. They were like airlines, right? They regulated very expensive is what it was, right? So here's the rules. You can only charge a stupid amount of money. Okay, good job, regulators, right? I mean, it cost a fortune to fly across the United States, right? I mean, a fortune in those days. It's way less expensive. I mean, to fly across the United States now than it was when I was a kid. And I'm not inflation adjusting it at all. It's crazy expensive. Well, it was also for stocks. And the specialists on the exchange were trading in fractions of shares, not decimals, right? Like, well, I don't know if I want to spend 5 cents a share to trade. That adds up, and it does. How about an eighth of a point? 12.5 cents. That was only reserved for the highest volume stocks, is an eighth. That's how much spread there was. And in stocks like Trust Joyce, which was a really great company here locally till they were bought out, right? Weyerhaeuser bought them. Super great, locally homegrown company. I remember paying $1.25 to $1.50 at times was the spread. Now, what's the spread mean? It means if I want to sell the stock at I think it's trading at 20. The last trade was at 20. I may have to sell that at $18.50, $1.50 less per share. Significant cut. So when I am one of those, go out and talk about the electronic trading, it's way better. It really is. I just don't like the machines in control. I don't want 80% of the trading to be done by machines. I want the simplicity and cost of a penny or two per share spread. So instead of selling my stock at $18.50 because I want out, my stock is sold at $19.99 on a $20 stock. That's how it works. That's just buying and selling in the spread. Now, when that happened and it became less expensive, we also found that the Schwabs of the world came along. And boy, did the commission start to drop. And they did. And this was in the early 80s. And this started making it much more affordable for individuals to invest. And more people invested. The margins in my business have collapsed. Trading now is literally free. You can buy and sell stocks free. Free. So our clients that we happen to custody at TD Ameritrade, which is now becoming Schwab, don't pay one penny to buy, let's just say, Microsoft. None. That's amazing. Now, you might say, well, wait a minute, isn't there? Yeah, there's some taxes and stuff. That's the government, but it's not TD Ameritrade. It's doing it for free. Literally for free. They make money in other ways, obviously, but not on trading. In the old days, they charged a lot. I think the first trades for Schwab were 49 $99. Then it became $19.99 forever. $20. That was a great bargain, but it was still not free. Not even close. So things have dramatically changed from hundreds of dollars, huge spreads, called, we call them also friction cost, right? So trading, to now free and virtually no spread. You can buy fractional shares. You want to own Apple, but you can't afford to put in more than $50 a month? You can do it. Fractional shares of stock, all because of electronics. Almost 2 million shares a day on average are traded on the New York Stock Exchange now. What an unbelievable volume. It is so far and away the largest exchange in the world. It's just not even close. There's so much more to tell you about it and so many more lessons in here, but I really do have to go to Fox News. But when you think about what the availability is, just in my investment career, is really remarkable. It's really something. From extremely high cost, very, write a ticket, hand it to somebody who then calls it in. Literally, phone call to the exchange. To I push a button, it's instantly, I mean instantly, executed and on my screen now. And free. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. And you know, when you think about the margins, the cost, the regulation, this is such a lesson for everything, I think, is don't be protecting the margins in business, right? We always think about that. But here's the reality. Our firm, firms like us, have become very wealthy in a world where our margins have collapsed. Isn't that interesting? We don't make money on trades at all. I mean, nothing. Nothing. And the fees that are charged, not just by us, but everybody, are coming down. They've collapsed. Nobody charges, well, okay, some do, never mind. More than 1%. Nobody that I know. Certainly not for any amount of money. It's crazy. Crazy low cost, crazy availability for people. It is absolutely astounding. More money. Everybody's rich on less margin. Not a little less. A complete collapse. It's amazing. It's really, really stunning. All right. Don, thank you. That was kind of fun to look back at some of the data there and to really make me look back at all the changes. There's much more, and I'm sure it'll keep popping up. I'm going to keep your email in front of me and just keep thinking about it a little bit, because there are so many things over the past 40 years that I've learned that I guess maybe it'll pop out some other new things to share. So thank you for that. I got to take a quick break here for Fox News. Our number, 580-KATE-IDEO. Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. Hey, if you want to listen to a podcast, look at our calculators, we've got articles, all kinds of things to help you with your own financial planning. That's at petsofinancial.com, and we'd love to hear from you anytime you have an ongoing question and just want to shoot a note over to us. We're there to help. We really are. And our number here is 580-KIDO. Terry. Thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Professor. How you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you so much.
Boy, just working through my first world problem of rearranging my library. I wanted to thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank me for what? Rearranging your library?
Well, your good work has given me the wherewithal to get through this lockdown and all, because I'm not spending any money, so I've been filling in the gaps in my library.
I think that's great. Well, I can't take credit for that. That's just, I'm telling you, there is so much money out there. Just this, people are just itching to get out and spend it, aren't they?
Well, I get to spend gas to drive over to the outdoor firing range in Parma versus going to the indoor here in Meridian, because, feel safer out there with bright sunshine and all. So
that's true. It really is. I think there's such an advantage to being in the summer now, and people can get out, and I think feel safe, right? At least I do. I feel very safe.
The stern looks of disapproval I get when I'm walking around outside not wearing my mask.
Yeah, I saw a funny thing this morning. I just went, okay, people got to make their choice. But I saw somebody riding their bike on the street, mind you, by themselves with a mask. And I thought, okay. I'm not sure. I was thinking, good for her. She's trying to help other people be safe, but there are no people around her. So I was confused, but it's personal choice.
Well, we're easily confused, but if it makes you feel better,
right, right.
The question I had is: are your people in Seattle all right?
Yeah, they are. They're okay, and they are okay. They're. Thank you for asking. They're doing fine. Their life is far enough away from that, but. It's unfortunate, and I know how disappointed my daughter is in her city and has been for a long time with homeless people on the sidewalks and things like that. And she's certainly not conservative. So it really doesn't run the political gambit in that sense where she can't take her daughter down there.
You reap as you should. Well, why can't she? It's a valuable learning experience, I imagine.
It's unfortunate for her. She did go down there and went to Pike's Market with her not long ago. I think it was last summer, actually, and that was the last trip downtown because somebody was acting up and being strange, and the kids were scared, and I don't blame them. Yeah, it's.
Well, if she wanted to move back, we might have trouble finding her a house in the North End, but she'd be welcome, wouldn't she?
Yeah, she would. I know. It's so funny. I actually had this discussion, although we don't talk much politics at all. I said, really, it's very interesting that Boise is far more diverse than Seattle, although they think they're diverse. She's like, what? What do you mean? I said, well, it's diversity of thought. We actually have people here that don't think exactly like, and they aren't put down. You have conservatives and you have liberals.
Oh yeah, you're typical progressive. We're diverse if you think my way.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. There's diversity of color, of sexual preference, and all accepting of all those things as long as you think exactly like I do.
It's just a matter of. Well, I'm not even going to go there. There's too much fun stuff to have there. I just wondered if you enjoyed that little video I sent to you the other day.
I did. That was great. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Anyway, I got to go back to my first world problem here, but I just wanted to thank you, sir.
Go to it. All right. You have a great rest of the day. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Dave. Bye.
Bye now. And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. And we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, do feel free to give us a call. We'd love to talk with you. Hello, welcome, and rolling on in our final segment here. Oh my gosh, fast today. Thank you. Thank you for letting me do this. I mean it. It's a brain changer. It is. Got to think. You got to think and think about stuff all the time that I want to share. So it makes me a different thinker, hopefully better. All right, let's go to the phones before we run out of time. Craig, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Yes. I have a couple of friends of mine have a lot of money coming due in certificates of deposit, and they were asking because to redo the certificates of deposit, they're paying nothing.
Yeah.
And I had originally said, just let it sit in the bank then for a while. But they did point out, I had not noticed, there's no money to be made in the bank either. So they were wondering, is there a strategy? What could they do so at least the money is not losing everything in inflation and That's what we're looking to find out.
Craig, it's a, you know, it depends what people should do, right?
Yeah.
And again, how we define risk is very, very important. I mean, I really mean that. When people can say, well, I'm not a good risk taker. We have to further define it, right? And say, wait a minute, what is it you're trying to do and how do you define it? If a temporary price move is the end-all, be-all to how you define risk, then you're limiting everything. In other words, if there's a price movement, that's only a problem if you need the money then. Okay? So if credit markets are going to seize up occasionally, and they do, and they can give you amazing opportunities, that's one way to look at it. I do. Or you can freak out because temporarily municipal bonds aren't trading very well and maybe down in price. Or you can say, wow, I cannot believe I can get a tax-free return of 4% right now when treasuries are paying nothing. Oh, I don't want that because, you know, I could get my statement and it might say instead of having 100,000, I've got 99.9. That's what risk is. I don't want it. Okay? Well, you don't want it if you need to sell your bond. But if all you're trying to do is say, I want some interest on this pile of money, then let's get interest on that pile of money and quit looking at it every day. Quit staring at it. Just let it get its interest every day and quit letting it freak you out. So what I'm saying is try to define how long-term is this? Is it short-term and so that price matters? Because if somebody says, I want no risk, I say, okay, then you have 0.7 on a 10-year treasury. That's what you get. Well, but that's not even true because if you look at your statement and interest rates go all the way up to 0.9, you're going to be crushed because nobody wants your 0.7 bond. And so you're going to get your statement and go, how did my 100,000 turn into 98,000? That's crazy. What I thought I bought a U.S. Treasury. You did. And they'll guarantee you your 100,000 in the 10th year. But in between, you have price movement, even on something that's 100% guaranteed. So you have to define it and understand, is price movement the end-all, be-all to how I define my risk? If that's the case, then all you can do is take a savings, right, or short-term treasuries, and they are yielding nothing. So you do have to try to define that. Now, are there things out there that have very, 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 very low risk? Absolutely. And you can actually get more than 1% on those. There are some exchange-traded vehicles with very short duration. Some of them buy only U.S. government bonds and things like that. So you can do that. But you have to understand price movement could be, you could have a penny or two a share. It might get a statement that said, my 100 turned into 99,800. Okay? So
well,
there are things
sounds
out there.
To me like a conversation has to be had with people involved, and it's odd because two different people with multiple CDs, and I don't know, they come to me only because I don't know why, but I can tell right now they both have different attitudes. So I would think it would be something they'd have to talk with a broker about or something. They're an investment person like yourself.
So. Correct. I think so because you really, and also they have to really stop and say, okay, now I'm beginning to understand myself, what I need to be focused on. You see, people think it's about picking the right investments and the ones that are going to go up or the right stocks. It's understanding ourselves and behaving correctly ourselves that defines how well you'll do. It really is.
No, I've learned a lot listening to your program, and then also when I retired and re-changed investments in terms of I didn't have the mental stamina to keep attempting to invest by myself. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe how easy it was when I talked to a financial planner like your office, and then with the mutual funds, which I was always against, figuring you had to own the original stock because that they were a waste. And it's been so easy to make money now.
Thank you, Craig.
And
Craig,
I don't even have to look at the market. So
good for you.
Great,
thank you, sir, for the call.
Thing,
thanks, everybody. Yep. I'm sorry,
bye.
We're out of time. Have a great weekend, everyone.